This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you.
Okay, everybody, welcome to the People Speak Radio Show. Again, this is your host, Charles Giuliani. We're joined today by Dr. John Johnson. He's the father of PFC Lavina Johnson, who was raped and murdered in the military. Quite a tragic story. For those that aren't familiar with it, Dr. Johnson, why don't you tell us, you know, what it is exactly that had taken place.
Okay. This started basically on the 17th of July in 05. Our daughter called us here, and it was very early. She was in Iraq. She had been there for 6 weeks. We had had some discussions prior to this day about her being in Iraq, being 19, and not having a battle buddy. We just had, you know, just a fear that something bad was really going to happen. My daughter called. She worked in telecommunication centers over there, so she was basically calling us every day. And she kept, you know, I'm not in danger. I'm among our own soldiers. I'm not in combat. And so she did all that to reassure us that she was okay. On the 17th, she called, and during that conversation, she said three things to us. The first thing she said was that they were going to be rotating, meaning her unit that she was assigned to over there, was going to be rotating back to the States in 3 to 4 months. She said, it looks like I'm going to be home for Christmas. I'm going to be in the States for a year. Then I'm going to have to rotate back over here and do the rest of my time. And then I'm going to get out of here and go to college, which is what I should have done in the first place. The other thing she told us, not to decorate the tree until she got home. We have a tradition after the Thanksgiving holidays. My wife, my two daughters and I, we decorate the Christmas tree. And she, even the 1 year, the 10 months that she was in the Army, the first Christmas, she did get a chance to come home. So she said, don't start decorating that tree. It looks like I'm going to get a chance to come home, and we can do it as a family like we've always done. The third thing she told me was that that upcoming week, which would have started on the morning of the 18th, she was going to be going to a new job. She didn't know what that job was going to be, so she was going to be in class that Monday to find out what her job's going to be. So she said, so if I don't call you Monday, I'll call you Tuesday and give you an idea of what my new schedule is going to be like. On the 19th of July at 7:30 in the morning, someone rang my doorbell. I got up wondering, well, who would be ringing my doorbell at 7:30 in the morning? My wife looked out the window, and she could see a soldier standing on the front porch. So she turns to me and she goes, John, there's a soldier on the front porch. And I just, oh, man. She said, what's the matter? I said, something has happened to Lavina. Mm-hmm. I went downstairs. I opened the door. The staff sergeant from Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri, is standing there. He said, are you Mr. John Johnson, father of Lavina L. Johnson? I said, yes, I am. My wife was standing on the balcony, and he could see her from the front door. He said, are you Mrs. Johnson? And she said, yes, I am. What do you want? And he said, this morning, he said, I have a message for you from the Secretary of Defense. This morning, Lavina L. Johnson died of self-inflicted wounds. And I can just tell you, my wife collapsed. I fell back on the stairs. I was just totally in shock, you know. My sons lived downstairs. They heard my wife just screaming. They came up the steps. My oldest boy came to me, but the one next to him went upstairs onto the balcony, and then we have two who lived up there with us, and they were just trying to console her. And I'm sitting there going, I don't believe this. I don't believe this. But then it dawned on me what he had said. So I asked him, I said, wait a minute. Did you just say that my daughter died of self-inflicted wounds? And he said, yes, sir. And now I know self-inflicted wounds is euphemism for suicide. Sure. So I said, are you saying she committed suicide? And he said, no, sir, I didn't say that. He said, but her death is being investigated. I knew then, we got a problem. That's how this whole thing started.
Wow.
Yeah. So the casualty NCO came the next day. And, of course, he went through all the funeral arrangements. Well, he told us all the benefits. There were two that I found very peculiar. You introduced my daughter as PFC, Lavina Johnson. She was actually a private when she was raped and murdered, as she was postmortemly promoted to PFC for whatever reason. I have no idea. Then they told me...
You pretty much smelled something foul right from the start.
Correct, yeah. And then they offered, they going to tell me what insurance benefits we were entitled to, et cetera, and so on, you know. So I told the casualty NCO, I said, I'm going to tell you something. There's something very, very wrong here. Mm. I said, first of all, I'm going to tell you something. I said, they said my daughter died of self-inflicted wounds. What happened to her? He said, sir, I don't know. So I said, well, somebody needs to tell me something. I said, because I served in the Army. I worked for the Army for almost 30 years in troop support position, and I know these people, and there's something very wrong. The casualty NCO actually was converted, for lack of a better term, to a messenger boy. And what his responsibility was to work on me, because they done figured out that I'm the strength of my family, and so they start targeting me. He came to me the next day, and he said, your daughter was found dead in her barracks from an apparent suicide. Now, nobody said anything about how she died. Then they made a series of mistakes to include coming to my house with that lie, but then they made another one. They asked me to have a closed casket, and I said, well, why is that? And they said, well, we understand it's really bad. So when he left that day, I told my wife, I said, you know what? I got to launch me a preliminary investigation, and I'm going to have to do it before the Army contains everybody, because I know that's what they were going to do. I know the stratagems that they try. So I called people and say, look, if you know anybody that's in Iraq that can tell me what happened to my daughter, let me know. A police officer friend of mine called me, and he said, John, I found out what happened to Lavina. He said, I'm on my way over to your house. Poor guy, he was so wound up, he had a heart attack, and I never got a chance to talk to him. He didn't die, but it just ended up being just horrific for him. The second message that I got was that my daughter was found dead in a tent and that she was shot in the head. That was the first time that I was...
And hence the closed casket.
Correct. Yeah. And so then the next message that I got was that she was found dead in a contractor's tent by a female sergeant near DFAS 2. And that she was in an area that was off limits to soldiers. So by the time the criminal investigator came to my house, and he came here on a witch hunt trying to find out dirt on Lavina, which there was none. And while he was here, I asked him, I said, why are you here trying to find dirt on my daughter?
Insult upon injury, yeah.
Yeah, when she was murdered in Iraq. Now, he said, well, we have to do a thorough investigation. I said, then you should be investigating in Iraq and not here, because that's where she was stationed. So they left out of here. Now, watch this. I went to work that day because I worked part-time then, and so they doubled back to talk to my wife. Now, the day that they came here, the casualty NCO, it was a criminal investigator and some woman he was training. The casualty NCO, now turned messenger boy, that's, at least that's my title for him, handed me an autopsy. And when they were sitting here, they started this, well, she was found dead in her tent. And I said, stop right there. I said, look, there's no need in us fooling around here. I already investigated Lavina's death, and I know for a fact she was found dead in a contractor's tent. And I said, and that contractor's tent was in an area that was off limits to soldiers. I said, so don't come up in my house. You done came up in here, and you done traumatized my whole family. Don't come up in here now trying to belittle my daughter's character. I said, because you're messing with the wrong person. And I said, and I swear to you, you're going to find out that I'm going to be more than what you think I'm going to be. I sat here and told them, you know, I wasn't no bones about it. I let them know, I'm coming after you. My daughter's body came here. Excuse me, did you want to say something?
I was just going to say, good for you. That's fantastic.
Yeah. Now, on a part of my preliminary investigation included inspecting my daughter's body, especially since they said, you know, not to open the casket. Now, I know she was shot in the head, and I knew she was right-handed. So I immediately looked on the right side of her head, saw nothing. When I bent over her body, I could see a skin draft on the top left cranial up over her left eye and her left frontal lobe.
They tampered with the wound.
Correct. I said, huh. So I asked the people at the mortuary, I said, is that a bullet hole? And they said, yes. I said, so somebody shot her in the head? And they said, yes, sir. I said, oh, okay, that's what I thought. So now I know, okay, she's shot. And she was shot execution style with, you know, on the top left cranium. I didn't hear anything from the Army until a criminal investigator called here. No, I'm sorry. On the 17th of August, I called the casualty NCO, and since he's messenger boy, I'm going to him, and I'm telling him, look, first of all, here's the first problem that we got. I said, the Army sent a staff sergeant to my house and said the Secretary of Defense said that my daughter was dead. The only thing that I had in my hands after when he left was nothing. I had his word that my daughter was dead, and they inferred that it was a suicide, but they haven't given me anything. So that's why when the criminal investigator came here, like on the 19th, the casualty NCO brought me an autopsy. Now, it was funny because they had this message on the envelope that, you know, I needed to talk to a priest or whatever it was when I opened this because the language was so graphic, you know.
Yeah.
And I told him, I said, yeah, I'm going to need a priest, all right, but it's going to be for repentance. I don't need a priest for anything else other than that, you know. And I sit up here, and so when the criminal investigator was getting ready to go out of here, like I said, I left. He came back and talked to my wife. My wife said, I'm going to tell you something. I don't know why you back here talking to me. She said, you ain't going to get nothing out of me. Somebody murdered my daughter, and you people trying to cover it up. Linda was very, very blunt with him. And he told Linda, we don't get involved in cover-ups like that. And Linda said, yeah, right, I work for the government. I know what you do. So he left out of here, you know. Now, back to the 19th, we had a criminal investigator who called me up. His name was Andrew Carlson. Andrew said, I can tell you what happened to your daughter, but I can't give you any names. I said, if you're not going to discuss her being murdered, then we don't have anything to talk about. He said, I didn't call you, sir, to argue. I said, you the one created the argument when you came to my house and lied about my daughter.
Sure.
I said, I'm just rebuttaling you, you know, like that. So he said, well, sir, we don't get involved in cover-ups. I said, who don't? He said, we don't. I said, we who? He said, the criminal investigators. I said, you're part of the Army. Why don't you?
Yeah.
He said, well, we report directly to the general of the Army. I said, oh, you do? He said, yeah. I said, okay. Now, remember he told me that, okay? They report directly to the general of the Army.
Yeah.
In April of 2006, I got a call from a reporter from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. He said, Dr. Johnson, the investigation into your daughter's death is completed, so you're getting ready to get a call from the Army. He said, call me and let me know what they say. So I had a problem with that because that was a violation of the Freedom of Information Act, that a reporter would know that the investigation is over before I do, and I'm the involved parent, you know?
Yeah, right, right.
Yeah, yeah. So I said, oh, okay. So I get on the phone with this guy, Special Agent Hughes, and this is exactly how he talked to me. Wait a minute. Can I go back? I want to go back to...
Sure.
I'm going to go back to the 13th of August, because this is important. The medical examiner, Ed Reedy, called me on that day. Our conversation went like this. What questions do you have? So I knew right there he was getting ready to play games with me. So I wanted to give him as little information as I could. Because remember,
oh, yeah, because they want to be prepared to you know, feed you with.
Yeah, yeah, you know. So because yeah. I'd already seen her body on the 25th of July. So I said, now listen to this, because this is important. I said, I just looked at my daughter's body a couple of weeks ago, and she had a bullet hole on the left side of her head, and she's right-handed, and I want to know how it got there. He said, what you saw was an exit wound. And I said, an exit wound from what? He said, your daughter stuck an M16 rifle in her mouth and shot herself with it. I said, oh, come on, man.
Get out of here.
I said, come on. I said, did you know I was a veteran? And he said, no, sir, I didn't.
If it's an exit wound, why did they tamper with it with, you know, coroner's wax or whatever?
Right, you know. Yeah. So he said, I said, she had a bullet hole on the left side of her head, and she's right-handed. He said, what you saw was the exit wound from an M16 rifle. I said, oh, come on, man. I said, first of all, the damage that I saw was not from an M16 rifle. I said, and if she had, the blowout in the back of her head would have been huge. He said, it was. I said, what was? He said, the blowout in the back of her head. I said, I saw a bullet hole on the left side of her head. He said, no, sir. It was on the back of her head. I said, are you listening to me? What is wrong with you? I said, didn't you hear me say I saw a bullet hole on the left side of her head?
And it was confirmed by the coroner.
Yeah, he said, it depends on the angle you're looking at.
Oh, please.
No, I'm serious. And I thought, you know what? I said, okay. I said, did you check to see if my daughter had been raped? He said, no, sir, there was no need.
No, I
said, you people said a 19-year-old female committed suicide, and you didn't think enough to see if she had been raped? He said there was no sign of a struggle. I said, she could have been overpowered. I said, that's not... I said, so you didn't do a rape kit? He said, no, sir, I didn't. Then he
said...
Oh,
yeah, he did a thorough investigation, all
right. Right. He said, we couldn't find a bullet, and... Zippity-zippity-ding-dang. So I finally got off the phone. I said, you know what? I said, you just became part of the problem. I said, I don't even see why we're talking anymore. So I got off the phone with him. Now,
John, did you ever get any threats before we continue?
Did I ever get any what?
Any threats, you know, to keep your mouth shut?
Actually, I had people to not personally, you know, I had people to tell me I need to be careful and all this kind of stuff, and my whole point is so what are they going to kill me? That's not going to make the problem go away, you know. And when you start hitting my age and somebody done wronged you like they did my family, that's the least of my concerns, you know.
I hear you.
Yeah, Yeah, but at any rate, so Special Agent Hughes called me in April, and this is how our conversation went. We completed the investigation into your daughter's death, he said, and we have to take into consideration the Freedom of Information Act. By the way, we concluded that your daughter committed suicide. And I said, no, you didn't. He said, I beg your pardon? I said, no, that wasn't your conclusion. That's what you're telling me. I said, and you know why? I know. I said, I'm a behavioral specialist, and you were very apprehensive about telling me that you concluded it was a suicide. And that tells me that you are not confident in what you just told me. Then he said, Andrew told me that you had some questions. So that told me they had been talking up there, you see.
Yeah.
And I said, yes, I do. He said, well, what information do you have? I said, trust me, I got more than you think that I do. I said, but I think what I'm going to do, I think I'm just going to give it to an attorney. So he said, you don't want to share that with me? And I said, no, I don't. He said, I would have no problems reopening this case. I said, well, you created a problem when you didn't do the right thing in the first place. I said, so reopening this case is a moot point up in here because I already know that this is a cover-up. I said, but rest assured, somebody murdered my daughter, and I am not going to stop until I get justice for it. So you can run and tell your bosses that, you know.
So he, excellent.
So he got off the phone. So that's pretty much the gist of the whole thing until we finally got the information from them. The package that we received, of course, it was regular mail, you know. One package came from the criminal investigators, and it was a whole lot of paperwork of 600-some-odd pages or whatever it was, and about 300 black and white pictures, and they were actually Xerox copies. They weren't even pictures. So I got a second package from the medical examiner, and so I kind of tried to go through that stuff, and I'll be honest with you, I went through, and the first picture that I stumbled up on, in lieu of the fact that it was black and white, it just traumatized me. Because it was my 19-year-old daughter laying in what looked like trash with her right arm draped across her eyes, her left arm in the upward position, and her legs. She had on a jogging suit, and her legs gapped all open, and you know, and that was degrading, you know. But it also told me that that was a staged crime scene. I got so upset. This is the honest truth. I had to close that package up in a hurry, and I hyperventilated up in here, man. I thought I was going to have a heart attack. I was breathing and so fast, and I went into the bathroom, and I sitting there, and I just, John, you know, you got to be calm, you know. So I finally calmed down. My brother Joseph has a degree in criminal science. He was on a tactical unit up in Illinois for over 15 years. So I called him up, and I said, Joseph, I'm going to need your help. He said, what's up? I said, I need you to do an exploratory investigation into this information that I received from the Army. He said, oh, okay, John. So we met for coffee, and we made copies of everything, and he took it with him. He called me at first, and he said, John, man, he said, he said, I can't do this right now, man. He said, because I'm just looking at Lavina laying here dead, man, he said, and I'm going to have to compose myself, he said, because I'm really having a problem right now. And so I told him, I said, well, Joe, don't worry, man, because we don't have anything but time. Lavina's gone. I can't get her back. So this is on their dime. So, you know, take your time. Well, that didn't last long. He called me up later that night. He said, John, man, he said, Lavina was murdered, man. He said, they tried to hide it in these black and white pictures, man. He said, but John, man, he said, listen to what I'm going to tell you. He said, I see Lavina with a broke nose. He said, her neck looked like it's broken. he said her shoulder looked like it's dislocated and her elbow. And he said, and I can look at this picture and tell that when she died, she was laying on her left side. And I said, really? He said, yeah. He said, because you can see.
Yeah, the blood settles or whatever.
Yeah. And he said, so this picture with her lying on her back, he said, this is staged. He said, John, man, he said, I hate to say this, John. He said, but man, this looked like a horrible, horrible murder, man. He said, now, I have a question for you. He said, do you have a copy of a CD? And I said, a copy of a CD. He said, yes. And I said, no, I don't. He said, John, you got a friend in the Army. Somebody sent you a picture of a CD-ROM. And I said, you're kidding me. He said, no. He said, there are colored pictures somewhere, John, but they didn't want to send them to you, so they must be bad, you know? He said, what we need to do, John, let's get together and compile. And he said, I'm putting together an information package with their own evidence in it. He said, but we're going to put together another letter and request this CD-ROM. I sent the request to them, and they wrote me back and told me I wasn't entitled to it. I wrote them back and said, look, I worked for the government for almost 30 years, and I know the Freedom of Information Act. I'm more entitled to Lavina's, anything pertaining to Lavina right now, more than you, because you gave her body back to me. So basically, you out of it. I got a response saying there are people involved in it, and according to the Freedom of Information Act, we have to protect their names. So I fired back and said, no, that's not right, because the law says if I get this in federal court, I'm entitled to everybody that's involved in this. He said, he wrote me a letter back and told me to get in contact with the legal department. So they was ready to keep it in-house.
The runaround. Can you hold that thought? We got to cut for a short break, but
sure.
Definitely want to pick up from there when we get back. Stick with us, folks. Short break.
Got questions? The library's got answers. And books and magazines and CDs and videos and web access and databases and all sorts of other resources at your library. In a world that's information rich, libraries are information smart. Find the right answer and a whole lot more at your library.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson for Normal. And like millions of other responsible Americans, I smoke pot. There's nothing wrong with the responsible use of marijuana. And it's none of the government's business. Let's get the government out of our private lives once and for all and stop arresting smokers. Let's take a stand for personal freedom. And learn how you can help. Go to normal.org.
Come, you masters of war.
Hello, this is Cindy Sheehan. America's war on terror has become a war of terror, with endless drone bombings, continuing military occupation, as well as detention, rendition, and torture still being practiced under the current administration. I lost my precious son Casey to war, and now work towards a day when not one more mother, son, or daughter will suffer such a loss. Listen to my podcast, read my blog, and come join me at any activities I attend near you. Please visit CindySheehanSoapbox.com for more information, and let's work for peace together.
Build, destroy.
This land is your land. This land is my.
Join us on The People Speak for an hour of live interviews and audience interaction, as guests from various realms of interest share their work and strategies which impact our world and make a difference. That's The People Speak every Tuesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific, 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern on the BBS Radio Network.
This land was made for you and me.
Okay, everybody, welcome back. Once again, our guest is Dr. John Johnson. He's the father of Lavina Johnson, telling the horrific story of how she was raped and murdered in the military, and how the whole thing has been covered up, and his fight to get to the bottom of this. Do you remember, John, where you left off before the break? You were talking about the CD.
Yes. We actually, I went to Lacey Clay, who's my congressman, and I filled out an information, a Freedom of Information Act,
yeah,
for him to get that CD for me. Well, as it turned out, he was on that Jessica Lynch Pat Tillman committee. And when his time came, General Johnson was sitting there, and he said, sir, there seems to be these rapes and murders in the military and cover-ups. I think that's pretty much what he said. He
yeah.
said one of them was a constituent of mine, Lavina Johnson. That general sat there and said he didn't know who Lavina was. The second time Clay came, he held up that picture of that CD-ROM, and he said, sir, the family is entitled to this CD. Can we make sure that they get it? He assured Lacey Clay on the camera that he would cooperate. My understanding is that he went to Clay when they got off camera and told Clay that I had everything I was entitled to. I understand Clay went to Henry Waxman, who was the chairperson over that committee, and when Waxman came back, he ordered the Army to send that CD to Congress. And so he gave them 30 days. Of course, they took 45. And then Lacey Clay came to town and brought me the copy of the CD-ROM. And so I had two of my brothers to go pick it up because I didn't want to hear any, for lack of a better term, crap, because I knew he was coming to bring me some, and he did. I'm not going to discuss that right now because it was insulting. But my brother Joseph took the CD to his house, and he called me up. He said, John, he said, you got to come over here, man. So I said, okay. He's got one of these little gadgets where you can show one picture at a time. And the first one he popped up was the gunshot wound to Lavina's head. And it was an execution-style, small-caliber weapon, and they had put the scalp back to make it look like it was a bigger wound than it was. So I asked him, I said, look, did you have a... I looked in those black and white because I didn't... See, one thing they tried to be slick by sending me these black and white Xerox copies of pictures. But they actually did me a favor because by me looking at the black and white, I kind of desensitized myself, if you understand what I'm saying.
Sure, sure.
So by the time I got to the colored pictures, I was okay, you know. So he showed me that bullet hole, and you could see the bullet. You could take a pencil, man, and stick down in that bullet hole. So I asked him, I said, look, did you see any picture in here with her with a bullet hole in the back of her head? He said, no. I said, I'm going to tell you why I ask you that. And I showed him a statement. Now, we call these evidence support statements. I don't know what the Army call them. And this is what it said. The wound to Private Johnson's head is consistent when the barrel of a weapon is stuck in the mouth and the round exit the back of the head. I said, there it is right there in black and white. He said, there are no pictures of her with a bullet hole in the back of her head. So they lied.
Yeah.
He said, John, he said, that's an entry wound. And his supposition was that the bullet had lodged in her tongue because we couldn't see any damage to her chin where it would have exited.
Exited, yeah.
Right. So now, so we're working off of a supposition there. Now, he found another picture that just flabbergasted me. He laid it on the table, really, and he said, tell me what that is. So I looked at it, and then it dawned on me that it was my daughter's vaginal area. So I said, oh, my God. He said, John, he said, they said that Lavina had condyloma. See, she had sex and had condyloma. He said, look at her vaginal area, John. He said, that labia is swollen, and it got tears up at the top of it.
There you go.
The other one. I'm sorry.
I was just saying, there you go.
Yeah, and the other one was collapsed. Yeah. But what was really appalling was she had a foreign substance in her vaginal vault, and it was a, whatever it was a coagulant. It was just sitting in there, hit her wedged open, so you could tell it was hard, you know? So I asked myself, what the hell is that? Now, since she was found dead in the contractor's tent, we assumed that it was probably Lyme, okay? Well, I kept investigating, and I stumbled up on a chemical compound. So we got a young lady that has a degree in journalism that's on our team. She's the only non-family member on our homicide team, but she does research for us. And so she did research on this chemical compound, and this is the compound that they use when soldiers get wounded in combat. It's a powdery substance they pour in these wounds, and it hardens so that the soldiers don't bleed to death. So then that supposition was that was a chemical compound that they poured in there, and they probably did it to destroy DNA evidence.
Unbelievable.
But she could find some residue on her thigh because it's got an acidic base to it. And once it touches the skin, there's absolutely nothing you can do about it. You know, so she's found residue and also on the around her anal. Now, let me say something else.
I tell you what, before you go on, we do have a caller. Did you want to take the caller first, or did you want to finish your
however you want to do it. I'll remember it.
This is just incredibly disgusting information, and I tell you, John, I admire you that you can even talk about this because, quite frankly, I couldn't do it. I would probably be losing my composure, and not only out of sadness but also out of anger. You know, I'm amazed that you can contain yourself the way you do. I this is so disgusting. We do have a caller. I think his name is John on line one. Are you there, caller?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, what was your question for our guest?
Yeah, I was wondering, is this an isolated case with Dr. Johnson's daughter?
Yeah, that's one of the questions I was going to be getting. It's actually not, but I'll let John answer that.
Actually, I'm the psychological profiler for my homicide team, and I've profiled 10 cases, but there are two that stick out because I've talked with the parents. Tina Priest was 20 years old. She was raped by her platoon sergeant. She went to a chaplain and reported him. He sent her to a psychologist or a psychiatrist, whichever one it was, and he examined her and said she was stable but exhausted and sent her back to her unit. She got harassed by this culprit, and her mother told me that he came in one day and told her battle buddy to leave out of there, and then he shot her in the stomach. She had a ballistics test done, and the ballistics came back and said, her being 5'2", it was almost physically impossible for her to shoot herself with an M16 rifle. The Army countered by saying she sat on a bed and pulled the trigger with her big toe. And Tina Priest is just, you know, she's just taken by the whole thing. The other one, Deborah Bornozak, Lieutenant Deborah Bornozak, I met her mother at an awards ceremony. Her daughter was shot. She said that the Army said that her daughter committed suicide and that she had left a suicide note. So I asked her, I said, did they send you a copy of a suicide note? And she said, no, they didn't. I said, do you know why they didn't send that to you? She said, because they knew that I would recognize her handwriting. I said, not only that, if you had the mindset to take it to a handwriting expert, that would have created another problem for them. So the stories just, they go on and on and on. I mean, there's Lakeisha Morgan. I mean, it's just, you know, at least 10 that I profiled. And I did that to see an established pattern in these kinds of cover-ups, and I found it.
Incredible. Caller, was that it? Was that the gist of your question?
Oh, I was just wondering, is that why do you think this hasn't hit mainstream? Do you think it's purposely being covered? Do you think the military is going through extended efforts to prevent this from, you know, coming out to the public?
Now,
and that's my question.
Yeah, I'm gonna answer that question like this. I received.
Okay, thanks, Paula. We'll let you go because we got, you know, a lot of other things to cover. We'll have him answer that.
Okay, we had a petition that was set up where we were collecting names to send to Congress to get them to reopen Lavina's case. The gentleman who put that post that posted that website received messages from all over the place. In 2006, in February, Essence Magazine was going to do an article on Lavina. But, you know, the media set up that when they do these things, they have to go to the Army for a comment. So when they went to the Army for a comment, the Army threatened them and told them if they did this story, they would pull their advertisement from the Essence Magazine. So apparently there was some compromise made that they would not advertise in the magazine, and Essence did a little half page called Collateral Damage. It wasn't a lot, just the father said zippity-zippity-doo. But somebody sent, the gentleman who had that website posted, where the executive producer of Essence was obviously going around talking to journalist students, and Lavina's name apparently came up, and according to her, and this was the warning that we got, she said, Lavina's story will never make it to the national media because of advertising dollars. That was what she said. We've had CBS, CNN, ABC, and NBC, all of them to show interest in our story. But the moment I start saying it was a high-ranking officer because she was shot with a 9mm execution style, everybody backed off. And so they just kind of left us out there hanging. All of them did. So, no, her story has not made it to the national media, and we suspect they're going to people. And you have some of these companies that own some of these radio, TV interview stations, and they got these multi-million-dollar contracts with the military, and they're not going to bite the hand that feeds them. So I think that's sure. What that essence of that magazine was.
Definite collusion.
Yeah.
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 Yeah, that's pretty typical. We only got probably about less than 10 minutes. I wanted you to finish the horrific story you were talking about, the wounds that you noticed, particularly vaginal wounds. That's where you left off before we took the caller.
Yeah. That vaginal wound was one thing. We also found where Lavina's body was burned almost all the way down the right side of her body. And so you could see at the thigh it was pronounced because it was first, second, and third degree burns. Now, we know for a fact that there was fire set at the crime scene. We know that because we've got a picture where there's a Bible with a rosary wrapped up in it. And that Bible, that paper was used as an accelerant. Now, here's the problem. Witnesses said that Lavina had a bench turned upside down on top of her with a lit accelerant sitting on the bottom of the bench. So my question is, well, when did she shoot herself? Did she shoot herself first and then turn the bench over on herself and set the accelerant on the bottom of the bench? Or
yeah.
Did she turn the bench over, set the accelerant on, and then shot herself? Now, here's something else. Her rifle is nowhere near her. Now, here's how we know that the criminal investigators made up statements. They've got one statement that where this was supposed to have been a medevac person. There were two statements. One of them said, I moved a rifle to check for signs of life. Now, here's the problem with them saying that. Lavina was lying there. There's a gurney lying next to her, and her M16 rifle was laying on the other side of the gurney, all completely lined up.
Yeah.
So that's staged. The second statement said, I moved the rifle and checked for signs of life, and I could see a hole in the back of her head. So we know for a fact that statement was made up, probably both of them. We don't know. But when we asked, I showed the medical examiner, Ed Reedy, that picture of the back of her thigh. He said it was slipperage. And so I said, you mean slipperage as in the body deteriorating physically? He said, yes. I said, you said in your autopsy that when you got her body was frozen. He said, I didn't say that. So I handed him his autopsy. I said, right there, you said body received in frozen condition. So they put her body in a coroner's cabinet where the temperature's cold, and that's the purpose of freezing the body so that it doesn't deteriorate. I say, but here's your autopsy. Show me in your autopsy where you said there was slippage to the back of her thigh.
Yeah.
He said you don't write everything in an autopsy. I said, but slippage is one of the determiners of when a person died. So you mean to tell me you didn't think that was worth mentioning in your autopsy, but you meant there were no noticeable tattoos or scars? Lavina had defensive wounds on her right thumb. The skin was torn out, so it looks like she tried to defend herself, and they snatched it out of her hand. We actually found where she was actually wearing two different Army PT shirts at the same crime scene. One of them had smudges on it and not splashes. So they changed that shirt, and by them sending me black and white, they thought they were going to conceal it, and we really didn't see it until we got the colored pictures on that CD. So, and we could, it was horrible, man. We could see bite marks on her body, you know, more than one. So Lavina put up one hell of a fight for her life, and my summation is, the supposition is that it was more than one person, one of them obviously an officer, and one maybe was even a female.
Wow. Unbelievable. As yet, have you been able to get any handle on who you think might, you know, was this just an average soldier? Do you think this was high level?
High ranking.
High ranking.
Yep. And I don't want to be yelling his name out, but I always tell people this. Do a little research and see what high-ranking officer was in Iraq at that time that was court-martialed for sexual misconduct.
So you think you actually know who it was?
Yep. Well, I've told the news media. I've told ABC, CBS, and I even in fact, CNN was getting ready to travel down here to talk to me, but they talked to Ann Wright. And Ann Wright told him that we had a suspect. And so I was called, Francis Phyllis or whatever her name is, and she called me and asked me that. And I said, yeah, and I gave her the name. I never heard from her again. So I don't, you know, I don't do the name anymore. We do have a suspect.
Do you think this individual has been behind some of these other instances, parallel instances?
Now, as a psychological profiler, it's my contention that since we're creatures of habit and we have a tendency to do things that we can get away with, my guess is the fact that he was court-martialed, either they thought they needed to do something or there was a pattern of this person having that kind of behavior and they felt they needed to do something. So it could have been.
Well, you know, you look at other things that have gone on, some of the... you know, the torture and, what is it, El Garib there, and, you know, the rapes that were going on. You know, we shouldn't be surprised.
Yeah. Well, there were some emotions involved in this, and it could have been resentment, could have been hate, could have been, you know, angry.
She might have seen something that she wasn't supposed to.
Yep.
Who knows?
And that's one of the rumors.
Yeah.
Was that she saw something and she talked about it too much and that got her killed.
Yeah.
But she was raped, so we don't know if all that was encumbered of not or not.
Absolutely disgusting. Yeah. I tell you what, we only got a couple more minutes left. I wish we had time to go into more detail. In fact, before I get to some of these questions that have come in via text, do you have any website or anything else that you'd like to share where people can go get more information and even provide support?
Actually, there's LavinaJohnson.com. And when you get on that website, that's one source. Another one is FairMediaImages.com. That's another one. And there's another one. I think it's Justice for Lavina, something to that effect. And I've gotten the latest email that I got was sent to us by a news organization. I think I was told that investigates stuff, and they're comparing Lavina's death with government cover-ups, like, you know, Martin Luther King, et cetera, and so on. You know.
Yeah.
So it's on Wikipedia. I mean, it's all over the place, you know. And they tried to contain it because that was, and they kept it out of the national media. But thanks to talk shows like this one and some other sources that have come to us, we've been able to get the story out anyway. So we've been very, very fortunate in that regard.
So once again, folks, that's LavinaJohnson.com. It's spelled LaVena. And then Johnson, JOHNSON .com. You can go there and get more information. Just really quick, a couple questions have come in, and we might not have time. Oh, actually, we don't really have time. Let's see. I'll just get to one of them.
Okay.
This girl asks, Ellen in Ohio, she says, is there a Mrs. Johnson, and how has she taken all of this ordeal?
Yeah, Mrs. Johnson, I've been married almost 36 years. Mrs. Johnson was just totally traumatized. I had to put her under a doctor's care. And, you know, it's been almost 8 years come this July. My wife is really just now kind of recovering from this, but she still can't talk about it. People meet her all the time, and they try to offer empathy, and you know, and she cries. And my family would never a person said this. Nothing is more tragic than losing a child.
Sure.
Nothing is ever the same. And that was General Dwight D. Eisenhower, and he's absolutely correct. My family would never be the same. The mere fact that we work for the Department of the Army and that I'm a veteran and that my daughter's third-generation Army, we get treated like this is just appalling.
Absolutely deplorable.
Yeah. Right.
Well, my friend, unfortunately, we've run out of time, but I want to thank you for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me.
I want to encourage you. I don't think you need encouragement, but I want to encourage you anyway to keep fighting. And you're a very brave individual, and I wish I had your composure. You know, if something like this ever happened, heaven forbid, that, you know, I wish I had the composure to go on the air like this. I don't think I could do it.
Okay. Well, you know, we say that, but sometimes when these kind of tragedies hit us, we're very resilient people, and we have a tendency to do what we have to do. And so it's easy to say that when you're not faced with that, but faced with the same set of circumstances, who knows?
Well, you've certainly done just that. All the power to you, and good luck in trying to get to the bottom of this and get more public attention with it.
All right. Thank you so much.
You bet. Take care, my friend.
All righty.
Take care. Yeah, bye-bye. Folks, next week we're going to be joined by Anna Balzer. She's the author of Witness in Palestine. So she's going to be sharing some of her experiences and what's been going on, again, with the plight of the Palestinians. So don't miss that. We'll catch you next week. In the meantime, have a great week. We'll see you then, folks. Take care.
One bright sunny morning in the shadow of the steeple by the relief office, I saw my people, and they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is your land, this land is my land, from California to the New York Island, Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. Yeah, this land is made for you and me.